Welcome to our DC Diversity Dive, a podcast in which our diversity and inclusion team aim to recognize and support cultural practices and celebrations. By recognizing and supporting these occasions, which are an important part of many people's lives and well-being, we help to enable an inclusive and diverse environment in which everyone can thrive, regardless of their race, culture, or background. June marks Pride Month, the annual celebration for the LGBTQIA+ community. It's a time when this community and its allies honor the Stonewall riots of 1969 and the subsequent progress on equal rights. Pride Month embraces the wonderful diversity of this community and celebrates people's identities. As well as reflecting on the improvements we've made towards equality, it also promotes awareness and education on the issues these communities still face. It is a time to recognize that societies can still make much progress in their support of LGBTQIA people everywhere. Today, we look to discuss some of the difficulties people face and how to embody our values of being a change agent and being courageous with our guest speakers, Philip Freeborn, our Global Head of Services, April Dickinson, Senior Consultant, and Eric Zetterberg, Associate at Delta Capita. Let's start with the first question. What does Pride mean to you, and how do you celebrate Pride?
To me, Pride is, it's not a moment, but it's rather a kind of constant that's there with you. I think Pride as the holiday is very good, but I think that's supposed to be the kind of high point or manifestation of something that should always be there with you. Me personally, I'm not much of a going out and waving the flag party Pride person, but for me, Pride is spending time and appreciating the other people I'm friends with within the community and making each other feel valid and loved.
I like that. I think Pride Month for me kind of offers a time to sit back and reflect on how far we have come as a community and a society. And if you think back to the, you know, 50s, 60s, the times of Stonewall and Marsha P. Johnson going out and like physically fighting to have rights, it kind of makes you thankful that we aren't still in that place. We were those years ago. I think it also offers a chance to appreciate the feeling of community and togetherness, especially for those people that maybe don't get to feel that all year round. So yeah, I think it makes you appreciative.
For me, it's definitely a celebration of all things that people have fought so hard for. It's also a reminder to me personally that there are many parts of the world that don't yet support the groups that are celebrated during Pride Month. And I worry a little bit that Pride can be this joyous occasion, and it should be. But I also recognize, and with my own son, there are parts of the world where he can't travel safely. There are parts of the world that don't recognize the fact he's gay. And so I think it's a celebration, but it's also a reminder that the struggle needs to continue until people feel they can express their sexuality freely in all countries.
Thank you so much. And following up on that point, especially to what you said, Philip, do we still need Pride today?
I think it must be obvious that I believe we do need Pride. I do think it should be regarded as a celebration of all those hard-won rights, but I also think it needs to be a witness to all those other countries that don't yet recognize the rights of the LGBT community. And I think it's a great thing that people spend so much time celebrating and supporting that, whether you're straight or gay. I think it's fantastic that people feel comfortable doing that now. And certainly when I grew up, it wasn't easy for people to express their opinions on these topics. So I'm delighted we do celebrate it now. And I think it's worthy of celebration every year.
I was just going to say, I think, unfortunately, if you ask kind of the average person in a developed nation, they would say that, oh, queer people have the same rights as any other person. But it's like not the case, I don't think, in any country. Queer people are still systematically having their rights stripped everywhere in the world. Even just here in the UK, queer people account for a quarter of homeless youth. and that also disproportionately affects trans youth. Hate towards the LGBTQ community is still very much present. There's a fifth of LGBT people have experienced a hate crime or incident in the last 12 months, and that's 2 out of 5 for trans people. So I think the stats say it all, but it's also not just these big incidents that matter. It's kind of like the smaller incidents that people face on more of a daily basis, like harassment, language and derogatory terms, that kind of thing. So I think as much as on the surface people think it's not as big of an issue, I think it's still very much present.
And I want to come in and say, even though big pride events aren't really my thing, I think they're still exceptionally important as beacons for people who are uncovering that they are part of our community. Because though some of us had the luxury of being raised in a family that was very accepting and supportive, I know I certainly was. I was nervous coming out to my family, but, you know, I wasn't worried about losing my home or anything. There are people who that is not the case with and who live in communities where they might never feel safe to be very open. And I think events around Pride are a place they can go to see people who they can be accepted into the community by and learn what their experience is like and have more knowledgeable elders and people to support them around them.
I think that sentiment of community is also really important, Eric, as you said. And Pride gives us a chance to meet people within the community. So what can we do to support the LGBTQIA community? And in addition, what does being an ally mean to you? And what advice would you give someone who wants to be an ally but doesn't know where to start?
So, Kayla, I think for me, being an ally can mean different things to different people. I'm a parent. I've got 2 lovely boys, one of whom's gay. Being supportive to him, I think, means I should be considered an ally. But I also think I want to support all of the good work you and the network is doing inside DC. And so I feel as an ally in our normal lives, we need to do several things. One, we need to acknowledge the difference that we have, accept the difference. As I think April was saying, you know, making sure we stand up in a courageous way where we see intolerance and not accept that, and then be supportive. I think the worst thing that anyone can do is pay lip service to this topic or any other topic, frankly, but this is such an important topic and it's very important to me personally, that what we need to do is listen to what would make the queer people we have working for us feel safe and also feel that they have every opportunity of being promoted and supported as much as any straight person does inside the firm. So for me, an ally is about being supportive first and then also being courageous in that support and not accepting sometimes the snide comments that I used to hear a lot more when I was young. I don't hear them nearly as much now, but I think the homophobia still exists. We just need to be constantly challenging and intolerant of that kind of behavior. Now, if you don't know how to be an ally, the answer is I think you should be probably reaching out to our own network here at DC and asking how you can be an ally. I think that's a practical way of operating and, you know, giving otherwise a general answer I'm not sure is helpful. You would be ideal, I think, to tell any of us how we can be allies. But I think from my personal point of view, it is about support and courageous support.
Yeah, I definitely think we're all open. Our teams are open if anyone wants to speak to us about anything. But yeah, just off the back of that, I think like not just being an ally when it's fun. I think, you know, when you have to have those difficult conversations and when people are going through difficult times and they need that support, I think that's when it's important to be standing up for others. I think especially the people who just think, oh no, I don't know where to start in being an ally, I think educating yourself is so important. Educate yourself on the terms, on the issues that LGBTQIA people face, where support is needed. I think especially politically, like voting and being mindful of how parties treat LGBTQ people is important, and kind of exercising your right to vote and to be political as well.
An element I kind of heard in both your answers is the proactiveness. I don't think it's very ally-y of someone to be like, oh, well, this is all good now, so I'm good with it. No, being the part of the people who like help push for that next forward is allyship to me. And especially in those places where queer folks might be feeling a bit more isolated or not have any support. To quote one of my favorite slogans, an act of kindness can be radical in itself in what it does for people.
Amazing. We've also just launched an allyship training with L&D that can be found on Calidus in case anyone wants to learn more about how to be an ally. Then on to our next question. What was your perspective on Pride growing up versus now?
Pride seemed something a little bit more remote to me personally. It's now very personal, and my son has attended the Pride parades here in London. I think, as Eric was saying, there's been quite a change from the protest that probably it started off to a celebration to more, I think, what it is today. But I also think it's still this icon that we need to remind people of the work to be done. So it's been a dramatic change for me. It was also more broadly than Pride, it was a topic that was quite difficult to talk about when I grew up. It was just not the norm that people talked about their sexuality. And it's not that long ago that in this country, in the UK, that homosexuality was still illegal. If you were caught in performing homosexual acts, you were imprisoned or worse. So I think it's something that there's been great progress on. And in my lifetime, there's been massive progress on this topic. So it is quite different from how I remember Pride as a young man to today. And I think we should recognize that the progress that's been made, but recognize, as I think April was saying, the progress that still needs to be made.
Fortunately, I grew up in an extremely like liberal and accepting area, being from Sheffield. So fortunately, when I grew up, there was kind of always a positive light on like Pride and LGBTQ issues kind of thing. I would say the main difference is just that we're kind of protesting different issues now than we were maybe 10 years ago. Marriage and legal rights, I think, were kind of the top of the agenda in like the noughties, the 2010s. So I think now it's kind of a lot more broad, and it's kind of our position in society. There's still these issues that we have to protest for example, the Breonna Gay murder recently. I think there's these issues that are still happening, but fortunately it's less about, you know, being recognized in law and that kind of thing.
Yeah, I think the cat's out of the box. Like, queer people are here, and the idea of denying that they exist to like such a serious degree, and serious isn't the right word, but like, we're here and we deserve to be heard and we have a place in society to the detriment of no one. You know, we're just other people. We're the person next to you on the bus, and that's that. And I think at this point, it's about being validating to the people around us in our community and pushing back against the kind of vitriol that has a chilling effect that makes people want to retreat back into the closet and feel scared to be themselves in their public lives. You know, there's stories from like the 50s of, you know, two women living at home and having to lie to everyone that they're just roommates who split the rent, because if it came out that they were lovers, they would lose their jobs and become social pariahs and probably have to leave the town they live in. And we don't have that anymore. But a couple like that living today might still struggle to have their love and their relationship seen as equal in the eyes of faith, law, and social spaces. So I think it's important that we keep pushing for that to be considered as equally valid and important, as well as people's personal identities, because I think that's one of the big things we see people come after right now, that, for example, trans people don't know what they're talking about. And I'd argue that, well, it's them. I think they know more about themselves than someone just looking across them from the street or looking down on them from a speaker's pew.
Thank you so much for your insights. Now, circling back to the workplace, how can we create an environment that supports our colleagues to come out?
I think, obviously, first and foremost, being open and accepting is so important. But I think in practice, that means not making assumptions about people. You know, when you're in conversation with someone, there's really no need to use gendered language when asking them about their partner. You can just say partner. You don't need to assume anything about anyone's gender or sexuality, I don't think. And monitoring your own language around that. I think cishet people using their pronouns, and, you know, you can put them in your LinkedIn, you can put them in your email signature. And I don't think people maybe realize how important that is, because it kind of stops the othering of queer and trans people in the workplace if it's something that we're all on board with and we're all doing. And it just kind of shows, you know, I'm here to make an open and inviting workplace, and I'm here to be supportive of people, no matter who they are.
I think there are those little things like, you know, the pronouns under your name in an email or on your LinkedIn that might not seem like a lot, but I think to a lot of queer people, they are a litmus test to give them an indicator how someone might feel about you. Because I, you know, a trans woman in particular have this thing where they are deadly scared sometimes when they're out and about of someone figuring out that they are trans without them having control over who reveals that information or not. It's one of the reasons that leads to their deaths most often. And having those signifiers and letting them know through those ways, any member of the LGBTQ community, that you are someone who will be supportive and accepting and non-judgmental is one of the most helpful things you can do.
I have a question actually for my fellow panelists. I don't, you know, have a particular pronoun. I think my name is obviously Philip, and I think people assume I'm a man because of my name. And do you think I should also be putting pronouns beneath me so that I can be conformed, because I've never thought about the need to do that? But if you feel it would make everyone feel more accepted if I did that and others like me did it, then I would encourage people. But really, this is a question, Eric and April, for you, because I've never really reflected on that, whether I needed to do it before.
Yeah, I think it comes from a place of, like, if we had a trans man in our workplace, he might be called, you know, Mark or Tom, but he might still feel the need to put his pronouns because people wouldn't want to assume that about him. And obviously, it's like gender is fluid, people's gender changes. Like, it's nice to have that signifier to kind of show people, you know, don't make assumptions just because someone looks the way they do or acts the way they do or has a certain name or anything, not to make assumptions about their gender and how they feel in themselves. So I think if maybe a trans person has to do that, then it kind of creates a difference. If, okay, cisgender people don't have to do it, trans people do have to do it, it kind of creates a divide. So it's kind of in the way that if you would do it, then we're kind of, you know, all in this together. We're opening up that conversation around, hey, if you want to know something about my identity, ask me, or like, let's have a conversation about it. Less so about, you know, make an assumption, you can guess this about me. It's kind of about opening that dialogue and us like all being in the same space together, if that makes sense.
Yeah, no, it does make sense.
I think a member of leadership in DC doing that and kind of showing support for that can be an incredibly powerful and reassuring thing to someone, to a queer person in the company, because that means that, you know, you are the face and a leader at Delta Kappa, and knowing that they have an ally there can mean a lot to making someone feel more welcome and making them feel assured that they'll be respected within the workplace.
Okay, well, it sounds like I have an action to follow up on after this call.
Yeah, definitely. We also sent out a email notification, I think it was last year, about how to add your pronouns into your DC signature in case anyone else is interested in doing that as well. So, how important is the role of labels in the LGBTQIA+ community?
I may be the worst person on this call to answer this, but I guess my view is, and I hope it's not too controversial, my view is labels are both helpful to identify people who have difference, but emphasizing that difference is probably not what I believe in. I think we should emphasize the fact that we're all human beings and should get on with each other, whatever our particular sexual orientation is. And so I think labels can be helpful to identify groups, but I think they can also be unhelpful if they are used to stigmatize that group or indeed isolate that group. So I guess I got mixed views.
I actually tend to agree with you, Philip. I think, you know, sexuality is an important part of us, regardless of what sexual identity, and so is gender. But we are more than those labels. And at the same time as we have a right to experience life through those things and have those things validated by those around us, they're not the only things about us. I think, you know, I know a lot of queer people who get very annoyed at prescriptive stereotypes around those labels and want to be respected as other things besides that, but at the same time, not have those labels forgotten either.
Yeah, I think I would just reiterate what you've both said and said. There are definitely two sides of it. You know, for a lot of people, labels can really help them find their community and their belonging, and it gives them that representation when they know that. But yeah, labels can also be very constricting to a lot of people, especially because I think gender and identity and sexuality is so fluid that labels can make people feel like they aren't allowed that kind of moving and expanding who they are as a person.
Thank you so much. And then how important is intersectionality and diversity within the LGBTQIA community? And how do different aspects of culture interact with being LGBT?
Yeah, I really like this question because I think as much as all people in the LGBTQ plus community face many of the same struggles, we also have to acknowledge that there are people in the community that are facing additional challenges because of their identities and how that intersects with their queerness. So for example, you know, a white, cis, straight passing person is going to have a very different life experience than a black trans woman who are statistically 4 times more likely to be the victims of violent crime. I think it's easy enough for us to sit here and talk about what it's like being a queer person in the workplace, but we're all coming from a place of privilege, that we're all white and middle class, and we haven't got those voices to talk on the experience of someone else in the community who might feel like they've been a bit more excluded from the corporate world that we all work in.
Absolutely. And I think given the culture people can grow up with, I think queerness can have many different connotations to them. The thing that comes to mind to me is here in the United States, among certain Native American communities, there is an identity known as Two-Spirit, which is, from what I understand, a fairly unique gender identity that not only is part of who they are in terms of gender and sexuality, possibly, but also an important element of them reclaiming and recovering culture that might have been lost as a result of the past history of the United States. I know that there are similar identities in Asia, particularly in the Philippines. I believe there's something similar like this, which, if we were to give it a modern, I can't recall the name, but it's similar to what we think of being transgender. And I think that added cultural context can make these identities exceptionally meaningful to people as not only a way of being who they themselves are, but connecting or reconnecting to their communities.
On to our last question. What is one thing you want people to take away from our conversation today?
Well, for me, I guess I've taken one thing away, and I hope some of my colleagues would do this as well. Maybe this pronouns point that is more important than I realized coming into this conversation. So I will definitely take that away, and I'd like people to take that point away generally if they're not doing that in their signature. I think the point that, you know, it's remarkable. I think April and Eric and I, you know, haven't rehearsed our answers. I think we have very similar views on most of these topics. And it's really interesting because we all come from quite different backgrounds, different parts of the country in the UK, and obviously different continents. And it's remarkable convergence of views. So I take away this celebration, hopefully, of a consistent view on the right way to approach these topics, irrespective of whether you're queer or straight. I guess that's the big aha moment for me.
I think the thing you should take away is, I think, you know, in the professional space, we often think about how we present ourselves as professionals and how we present the firm. I think in context of Pride, think about how you present yourself as someone who the queer people feel safe around. You know, I think there is no bigger show of trust than someone willingly and on their own terms sharing such a important and personal and sometimes threatened part of their life with you, and them feeling safe knowing that you will support them. And, you know, take some time to reflect perhaps what you could do to be that person in someone else's life.
Yeah, I think I'd just like people to take away, be a voice in the right direction. Don't wait for LGBTQ people to start that conversation and talk about those issues. I think as a straight person, as an ally, you can be the person to stand up and be the first person to make a comment on issues and be that welcoming voice.
Thank you guys so much for your insights. Let's move on to our rapid fire questions. The first one is, why should we be change agents? And what does being a change agent mean to you?
Well, I think if we want to see a change in the workplace or in the wider community, all very good for us to say somebody else should be doing that. But I think it does become a matter of personal responsibility as well as requires some courage to make that change. But if we're not prepared to make that change, why should we expect others? So I think it's about leading the change we want to see in the community in which we live. And that includes, obviously, the DC community.
Yeah, I like that. I think just not settling for how things are and not kind of accepting, you know, this is the way it is, nothing's going to change. I think it's wanting to see that change and wanting to also create that change yourself and be proactive. And I think that's really important, especially in your working lives as well.
Exactly. I think of it this way. A lot of people in other important social movements that have happened in history have probably not been proud that they were the ones who stayed home and played it safe, for lack of a better word. I think a lot fewer people regret being the ones who were there and helped make that better thing happen. And, you know, not saying that you have to be out on the streets every night and everything like that, but, you know, being proactive and taking an interest in making any space you're in a better one for everyone who might be in it, I think is a very strong and good way to start.
Amazing. Thank you. Now on to my favorite question. Who are some of the queer people who inspire you?
I think the first person who came to my mind was a woman called Dani St. James. She's a businesswoman. She started a business that sells underwear specifically for trans people. And she also has a charity that uplifts trans plus people throughout the UK. And I think that's inspiring to me, that someone can kind of see the gap in the market and the gap in what trans people need in their everyday lives and fill that gap. And it also inspires me that her business that does sell underwear, she also incorporated a charity element of that. So people not only can buy the underwear, they can also pay for a donation of that underwear to go to other people. And I think that's inspiring, kind of having the business mind, but also leading that with like charity and giving as well. I think other than that, just the people I have in my own life, the people who are outwardly and visibly and openly queer and are activists within themselves, I think I find that so inspiring to just see everyday people who are part of the movement, and not only that, just part of being joyous in their own queer identity and being that representation for everyone else.
I think for me in recent years, Elliot Page, the actor, I grew up watching his movies before he came out and transitioned. And I think the fact that you are such a well-known and public figure and still have the courage to do that in your life and to push back against so much vitriol and negative reaction to that and still just push to live a happy, authentic life is an inspiration to everyone. I also think the Wachowski sisters, who you may know from the amazing movie The Matrix, I think what rewatch The Matrix and think about the fact that it was made about two trans women, I think you see a lot of very interesting things in there. And finally, my friend, I don't think I would have developed and learned to understand myself in as good and a healthy way if I hadn't had her around me to talk and discuss and feel supported when I was trying to figure those things out about myself.
For me, the person going back a bit more in time that I really resonates with me because I'm ashamed of what happened to him was Alan Turing. As most people know, he was a brilliant mathematician credited with shortening the war by a couple of years due to his working on this Enigma machine in Bletchley Park. And then because of his sexual orientation, he was basically chemically castrated, which is a terrible thing to do to another human being. So that would be somebody I would look to say, wow, we've come a long way. But that wasn't that long ago. And I'm still, although I agree with Eric's point that he made earlier about the relative ease now that people can be who they want to be, I think there are still TV personalities, footballers, rugby professionals, American footballers who still struggle to admit their sexuality because they think it's going to harm their career. So for all those people who do come out and are brave to do it, I mean, I admire, but those who still struggle, I also have to be concerned that I'm not sure the battle's won yet. There are still a lot of people who waited until they were in their 60s or 50s to admit they were gay because they didn't think it was acceptable to admit it earlier. So I think there's a lot of very courageous people out there who have come out and a lot of people who are still struggling, frankly, to deal with the industry or their profession and admit this. So for all of those people, let's hope they get the courage over time.
Yeah, I think that movie about Alan Turing, The Imitation Game, is so powerful to watch. Like, you kind of get to the end, feel like, oh, we've overcome this massive challenge, and for them that to happen is so kind of heartbreaking. I think, yeah, that's such a good movie to watch.
I think the story of Alan Turing really gets back to what we were talking about earlier with labels. Alan Turing was, I don't think anyone can go against this, a genius. But the man effectively invented computers before we even knew what microchips were, to a certain degree. And, you know, like Philip said, he was a hero. And then later in his life, that was stripped away from him because of another part of who he was that society decided was enough to erase all his other accomplishments. And they did not think that a gay man could be both all those wonderful things and something that they look down on.
Thank you so much for sharing, everyone. Those are some really inspirational people, and I wish we had more time to list even more inspirational queer people, because we know there are so many out there. And on to our final rapid fire question. What changes would you like to see businesses implement to support colleagues and encourage open conversations around pride?
I'll just make one point, and I think it's companies kind of have to put their money where their mouth is in terms of LGBTQ issues. I think it's all well and good to change a company logo for June to a little rainbow flag, but if the company is not going to then support LGBTQ people in the rest of its work, I think, what is that for? You know, support can be anything from donations to support of LGBTQ organizations, vocally showing support internally and externally on these issues that affect queer people. I think specifically uplifting and empowering their queer employees is really important as well.
Just building on what April said, I think the most important thing companies need to do and DC needs to do is just be authentic in whatever support they're giving. What it shouldn't be is tokenism. And I do think there is a bit of tokenism, not at DC, but I've seen at other organizations where they're making a big splash, and I'm not sure it's backed by, you know, the other 11 months of the year activity. So I agree with April's direction, but I think the companies need to be authentic and consistent with their approach during Pride Month with how they are the rest of the year. Otherwise, it's just paying lip service to something that they don't believe in. And I think we've got to be authentic as organizations.
Absolutely. You can't talk the talk and then not walk the walk, because walking is a little harder. I think an example of this is, you know, we've all seen pictures of the Pride Parade where there's some big company logo on a big expensive float. And then, you know, you might hear a few months later about how someone got pushed out of the company or didn't like working there because of their gender or sexual identity. And that's, I think that's one of the biggest examples that strikes me about companies wanting to appear as these forward-thinking, accepting places, but then not backing it up. And it starts to just feel like they are hijacking our community and a holiday that's very important to a lot of people in our community for some PR once a year.
A huge thank you to all of you, Philip, April, and Eric, for your insightful responses and for sharing your experiences and thoughts associated with Pride. A point that particularly stood out for me was that small actions can have a big impact, and how we act and speak has consequences, whether those be good or bad. And just acting as a reminder that we act and talk mindfully about these topics. These conversations are vital to how we can prioritize encouraging discussions on equality and equity in the workplace. Thank you for listening to this discussion. And please look out for more content from Delta Capita on our website, deltacapita.com, our LinkedIn page, and lastly, our Instagram, delta.capita.